Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is Even Stranger Things, The Montauk Project. I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. This episode is for Eloise, my good friend who suggested that I cover this subject. I hope you find this one intriguing, if not enlightening, because this certainly is a wild one. The Netflix show Stranger Things premiered in 2016. Many of you, I am sure, will be absorbed at the moment with the current and final season 5 which is playing out on the streaming platform. The series follows a group of young friends in the 1980s who uncover a supernatural and government plot to weaponize the unexplainable. It pays homage to the classics from my childhood of Steven Spielberg, John Carpenter, Stephen King and James Cameron. It's fun, even if it's not quite as fun as the movies that it's heavily influenced by. The show's original title, while in pre-production stage, was called, quote, Montauk. This is another homage. That's because the story, the overarching conspiracy plot within Stranger Things, might actually be based on true events. Now I emphasize the word might, as it entirely depends on what you choose to believe. But even if the account of what happened is too much for you to accept, it's still a hell of a tale. This story was only a series of rumors before 1992, when a writer named Preston Nichols published a book titled, quote, The Montauk Project, Experiments in Time. The book unveiled an operation similar to the US government's MKUltra program from the 1950s and 60s. In this program, subjects interacted with chemical substances and technologies purported to influence thought, manipulate time, and pierce dimensions. MKUltra was a factual program, a genuine piece of American history. There is no dispute about that. I might record an episode about it in the near future if it's something that you guys would be interested in. Let me know in the comments. The Montauk Project was a story about government experimentation that included psychic development, extra-dimensional beings, and thought control. But unlike the television series Stranger Things, this was reality, and it was nothing like the Goonies. This is a quick overview for you guys. Your mind, and how you make it up after I have shared the facts in this episode, is entirely up to you. Or is it?
And I found myself on this screwball project, which was known as Project Red Hawk, was the actual name, but it's popularly become called the Montauk Project, which started with the early stealth. You would know it's the Philadelphia experiment. We developed the electromagnetic bottle to hide any sort of a ship in. Up to that point, it was thought that the mind of man had no sensitivity to electromagnetics, which everyone learned quite to their mistake. Yeah, the mind of man is quite sensitive to electromagnetics. And from there, research was done, which I was involved with, of how to interface the mind of man to electromagnetic systems. The idea was you could fly your fighter plane by thought. Pure thought would fly the plane or drive the ship. But it evolved into essentially a mind control device, which is what they were really looking for.
The history of the Montauk Project begins with an earlier conspiracy, that of the Philadelphia experiment. You see, back in 1955, an amateur author and ufologist named Morris Jessop published a book called, quote, The Case for the UFO, Unidentified Flying Objects. Shortly after the book hit the shelves, Jessop began to receive letters of criticism from a man named Carl Allen. Allen was writing to Jessop at the time under the pseudonym of Carlos Allende. These letters attacked Jessop's book for a lack of knowledge about the physics involved, especially Einstein's unproven unified field theory. For clarity, the unified field theory describes an attempt to unify fundamental forces of physics beneath a single theoretical framework. For example, the theory would explain how electromagnetism and gravity are aspects of the same force. Anyway, in his letter, Allen explained that he had studied, understood, and witnessed proof of the unified field theory. He went on to describe the 1943 Philadelphia experiment. Carl Allen claimed to have been stationed on the SS Andrew Furuseth in the summer of 1943. He claimed to have witnessed a destroyer escort the USS Eldridge and push out from the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard with only a skeleton crew on board in order to test a top-secret technology. Outside of the harbor, the generators were engaged, and an electromagnetic field was created around the ship. Strangely, a green fog engulfed the vessel before the ship briefly disappeared from human sight. But then, when the ship returned to the harbor, it brought with it a horrific, nightmarish, and entirely gruesome scene. Some crewmates had been vaporized. Others had been fused to the bulkhead of the ship. There was gore all over the place. Surviving members of the ship's crew complained of debilitating headaches and nausea. Most had succumbed to a crippling madness or mental health defect. However, not all of the missing crewmen had expired. One would reemerge decades later with an even stranger story. His name was Al Bielek. In 1988, Al Bielek claimed to have uncovered hidden memories that had been sublimated through US government experimentation. Bielek claimed that his actual name was Edward Cameron and that he had been born in 1916. Both he and his brother Duncan Cameron were sailors in the US Navy and both on the deck of the USS Eldridge the night of the Philadelphia experiment. When the strange fog emerged, the two men, Bielek said, jumped overboard. However, they didn't land in the Atlantic Ocean. At the 1990 MUFON conference held that year in Pensacola, Florida, Bielek explained how they slipped through time at random until finally landing in 1983, at which point the men appeared on the site of Camp Hero, a military base located at the tip of Montauk on Long Island, New York. But let's expand further. The military base at Camp Hero was commissioned in 1942 as a coastal defense station. It was located on the point just south of the Montauk Lighthouse. The fort was named after Major General Andrew Hero Jr., cool name, who was the Army's Chief of Coast Artillery between 1926 and 1930. Montauk and Long Island in general was considered by US authorities as a likely invasion point should the Nazis choose to make landfall on the continental United States. So with this in mind, the Navy acquired land in the area, including Fort Pond Bay and Montauk Manor. They built docks, seaplane hangars, barracks and other military buildings in the area, as well as a huge torpedo testing facility. A battery of weapons were installed with the primary function to defend New York against German naval vessels and landing vehicles during the Second World War. Camp Hero was around 278 acres, or 1.13 square kilometers in size, and included four 16-inch naval battleship cannons. These were installed as coastal artillery pieces in two large concrete bunkers. They were designated with battery numbers 112 and 113, A 2-gun, 6-inch battery, designated Battery 216, was also installed at the site. The coastal gun emplacements were camouflaged with netting and foliage. The large fire control center was built next to the lighthouse to direct the artillery and anti-aircraft guns. Other armaments, including quadruple 50-caliber machine gun installations for low-altitude defense and both 90mm and 120mm anti-aircraft guns. The camp was a self-contained town with recreational facilities, barracks, and its own power station. The US military disguised the base as a coastal fishing village to maintain its anonymity. The military buildings were each fitted with fake exterior wood paneling and windows were painted into place. Trees, shop fronts, benches, post boxes, bandstands, and other paraphernalia were added to give the camp a genuine small town look. The camp gymnasium, for example, was disguised as a town church, including having a full-scale replica of a steeple added with functional church bell. When the Second World War came to an end, the base was closed down temporarily and used only occasionally as a training facility by the Army Reserve. The naval facilities were largely abandoned, with the gun placements dismantled in 1949. Then in 1951, Camp Hero became an Air Force base with a semi-automatic ground environment installation. The US Air Force's Air Defense Command placed an ANTPS-1B long-range search radar at Fort Hero and designated the site as Montauk Point L-10, where it once again gained strategic importance for the Cold War period. The radar dish collated information from smaller radar dishes that ran along the eastern seaboard. This information provided the United States with a 30-minute warning for an incoming Soviet nuclear missile attack. Montauk Point Air Force Base was a state-of-the-art base by the mid-1950s, and many new systems and technology were developed and tested there, including magnetic storage memory technology, light pens, keyboards, wide area computer networks, or WANs, and modular circuit packaging. The base was fitted with electronic countermeasure technology to protect its radar tech and developmental system from electronic attack. The Montauk installation was officially shut down on the 31st of January 1981, with much of the base remaining abandoned in place. Preston Nichols claimed to have worked on site at Camp Hero, and the following events are outlined in his book. While the Philadelphia experiment had been discontinued, much of the team and resources were relocated for further study under the operational name of Phoenix 2, colloquially known as the Montauk Project. The operation was officially located at Camp Hero due to the retired Sage radar dish that could broadcast between 425 and 450 megahertz, similar to the Gateway tapes. So, to expand on that, and for clarity, the Gateway tapes are part of the Gateway Experience, which was a project developed by the Monroe Institute with CIA backing. They are audio programs which use hemi-sync binaural beats and guided meditations. These induce altered states of consciousness, expanded awareness, and can facilitate out-of-body experiences and allow an so-called exploration of wider reality. The Gateway tapes gained notoriety after a declassified 1983 CIA report detailed their use within their psychic research programs. The report also touched on their development of blending science with metaphysics to manipulate consciousness fields for self-discovery, mind control, and higher-level problem-solving. The researchers at the Montauk Project wanted to explore sound frequencies and how they could manipulate human consciousness in research which continued from Project MKUltra in the 50s, 60s, and into the early 1970s. Researchers at Camp Hero began to utilize the retired radar dish by transmitting frequencies to a single chair inside of a safe concrete satellite building. Al Bielek's brother, Duncan Cameron, was selected as the main subject for many of these experiments. He was exposed to pulse and wave frequencies amplified by gigawatts of energy. Researchers noticed a correlation between the transmitted frequencies and affected moods within Cameron. He would laugh or cry, become agitated or fatigued. In fact, the entire base would fall under the influence of these frequencies, mimicking the same emotions. These experiments eventually took a toll on Cameron, and he developed scarification of the lungs and brain tissue, which led to further grievous injuries. Somehow, he continued to walk the grounds and participate in the experiments for a time, however. Soon, the researchers attenuated the signal from the radar and expanded their subject base to unwitting army staff and civilians in the surrounding areas. The mapping of frequencies and their outcomes was only part of the experiment, and the scientists located at the facility wanted to progress to broadcasting new, alternate realities, which the data they had accrued suggested was possible, although potentially highly unstable. In the mid-1970s, the experiments included the Montauk chair using Helmholtz coils, where a stable and unified magnetic field surrounded the chair and the subject within. The first experiment they conducted was called the, quote, seeing eye. During these experiments, subjects would be seated in the Montauk chair and given an item of significance, like a lock of hair or a personal effect from a target. Then after training, they would be able to see through the eyes of their targets whilst in the chair, and with the aid of the generated current being targeted into them. This experiment is similar to the Stargate project, whereby a US Army unit from the late 70s, which has since been confirmed by declassified documentation, were experimenting and conducting tests with subjects who were trained in remote viewing. The Soviets were conducting similar experiments at the time too, and there emerged, albeit secretly, a sort of psychic arms race of sorts, for both superpowers to be the first to develop mind weapons. It wasn't long until direct influence through the remote viewing was established upon the world around them. They could control inanimate objects and electronics, changing stations on radios and televisions, remotely switching off devices, or even rendering them useless altogether, frying the electronic components, for lack of a better phrase. Later, the subjects began experimentation in the area of controlling civilians, causing them to commit crimes or behave erratically. Development of, quote, Manchurian candidates. Whilst this might seem quite fantastic, the process is psychologically possible, although a long process. But there has long been speculation that Sirhan Sirhan, the gunman who murdered Robert F. Kennedy, was a test subject in a similar governmental program and possibly part of, or linked to, MKUltra. As the experiments continued, researchers noticed that their results sometimes occurred over a longer time frame. For example, Duncan Cameron may influence events or manifest objects outside of the current time. Future events, if you will. This discovery, allegedly, then led to experimentation into areas of space-time itself. Duncan Cameron, it said, created an aperture at 20-year intervals, a sort of portal that would allow them to travel to the past and to the future. The base researchers began to send men through, both soldiers and scientists, with the aim of exploring what was referred to at the time as the hyperspace. It was during these experiments that Cameron began to report sensing an external force, an outside influence that he felt was a higher intelligence. Lab assistants fixed radio and video transmitters to the exploratory crews, which fed a live feedback into the base monitoring laboratory at Montauk. In further developments, homeless people from New York City were abducted for experimentation. They were seen as ideal candidates to send through the portals, in effect, testing the impact of travel on the human body. According to an NBC News article published on February 27, 2011, human experimentation by the US government on homeless, the disabled, and prison inmates is regrettable, but has happened with regularity over the last 7 decades. Nichols claimed that there was a large on-site library of videotapes for every experiment conducted using the, quote, portal. Tapes, he said, that he himself had watched in their entirety. As time went on, it was alleged that the team behind the experiments also began to abduct boys between the ages of 10 and 16 and send them through the portal. Their initial orientation training was always the same. They would allegedly travel to the year 6037, to a world that was in ruins and which was described as stationary, stagnant, and without life. The engineers ran the transmitter non-stop to conduct these experiments, peaking at more than 10 gigawatts per hour. but it's alleged that device escaped their control. It had fallen into synchronization with something or someone else. Some witnesses speculated that this was the higher intelligence that Duncan Cameron had sensed, although this is pure speculation. This surge in synchronization created what was described as a sort of rift or aberration in the portal. It was August 12, 1983, when the incident occurred. From the portal, out of the aberration, emerged something that couldn't be controlled. A being. A creature. A life force or entity was manifested at the Camp Hero site. Some later claimed that it was some kind of subconscious manifestation, a generated anomaly born from a huge surge of power through the brain in the Montauk chair, a manifestation of the mind, or a living nightmare. Others claim it was a higher intelligence from another plane, the sensed intelligence Cameron had warned about. The witnesses who saw the beast saw something different. The creature attacked, destroying equipment and buildings on site. It reacted out of fear or anger. It was around 18 to 20 feet in height. It had four limbs. It was difficult to say if they were arms or legs. It used them to both walk and grab things. It was a dark red or brown and appeared muscular. It certainly had more power than any of the humans on site. Meanwhile, the transmitter could not be powered off or interrupted. The surge was sucking more and more power from the generator. The consumption was huge. It drained more power than several industrial plants working at full capacity. More power than the Hoover Dam could generate itself. The entire site lit up like it was daylight. Bright flashes of light beams and pops of sparks rained down, while a deep and low-frequency hum of electrical din droned loudly. The electrical hum was physically felt, and it shook buildings, vehicles, and people. The researchers attempted to disengage the power and disconnect the data cabling, but it wasn't until an acetylene torch was used to cut through the equipment that the aperture through time, the portal, or hole to who the hell knows, was finally closed. As the portal slowly closed with a huge and almost deafening sucking sound, the manifestation stepped back and slipped inside, lashing out as it did so. Nichols claims a military team of Black Berets eventually descended upon the Camp Hero site and transported the majority of witnesses off-site. Nichols doesn't know where they were sent and never saw those men again. Construction teams poured concrete through the halls of the underground base at the Montauk facility, and it was discontinued with immediate effect. The Montauk Project sold over 100,000 copies and became a cult classic in the early 1990s. Following its success, Nichols authored 5 additional volumes. Whilst many had heard the story of the Montauk Project, they also began to project themselves into the narrative. They swore that they were, quote, Montauk boys, previous test subjects that had their memories surpassed, though had been awakened by their sublimated memories resurfacing as the news of the project broke. Just as Al Bielek had described, Stuart Swerdlow was a notable example. Swerdlow claimed that the Montauk Project targeted boys that they believed to be expendable, those who were runaways or street kids, as they figured no one would miss them or even know that they had disappeared. He claimed they would fracture the minds of these boys by freezing, starving, and beating them, breaking them down subconsciously to create a clean and base slate with their minds. They would be tortured while under the influence of psychedelics, with the purpose of expanding their abilities and making them pliable for future experiments. Swerdlow would go on to publish a book titled, quote, Montauk, The Alien Connection. It detailed some of his early life and involvement in the project. Some skeptics have pointed to Swerdlow's spotty history as a sign that he's a potential grifter. So, Swerdlow pled guilty to embezzlement charges in the early 1990s for taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from a local food distributor. He served time in federal prison for this conviction. For balance, Swerdlow has stated that he was framed and that this conviction was a direct attack to discredit him. Do with this information what you will. After serving his time, though, he plugged into the Montauk narrative and eventually transitioned to becoming a New Age advisor, providing psychic guidance for a fee. While some suspected Swerdlow of financial exploitation, others had even deeper suspicions. In 1998, Chris Ketchum wrote an article for Gear magazine titled, quote, "It Came From Outer Space." In the article, Ketchum reported that over 25 boys had claimed to have participated in the Montauk Project. By this point, the boys were now grown men, and they made the pilgrimage to visit Preston Nichols, some traveling across the country. Many of these boys had come from broken homes. One example was Anthony Kraft, who had been in the foster care system. He suffered years of sexual and physical abuse before aging out of the system. He went on to become a drug addict and frequently spoke of delusions and mental health problems. He got swept up into the conspiracy of the Montauk Project. He even traveled to Preston Nichols' home for a session of, quote, deprogramming. The deprogramming technique was called hand scanning. In an interview with another former Montauk boy, Brandon Keel, Ketchum stated that Nichols would take these boys to a bedroom alone, require them to undress, then massage their bodies while he claimed to be scanning for frequencies. He would then begin to touch the subjects inappropriately. To be clear, these subjects were over the age of 18 and consented, and they firmly believed that they had been participants in one of the most elaborate government experiments ever conducted. When confronted about the deprogramming process, Nichols and his subjects told Ketchum that they had received no pleasure in these sessions. They were not sexual in nature, they were simply a grim necessity. Nichols has also claimed to have stopped these deprogramming sessions back in late 1998. Since Camp Hero has closed and been abandoned for more than 30 years, the US government has tried to sell the land for real estate development. However, environmentalists protested at the slightest rumor of an exchange. As a result, the site was turned into a state park in 2002, which is how it remains today. The derelict buildings and remaining underground tunnels are off limits to the public, but some urban explorers have trespassed into these areas with the hopes of uncovering some proof of the Montauk Project. One explorer, named Brian Minnick, discovered a tunnel underground that had an oversized, heavy door with a spindle lock, like a bank vault door. The door was heavy and very thick. Minnick uncovered rooms decorated with psychedelic wallpaper, and many have posited that these rooms were used for some of the experiments. Minnick also filmed the remnants of damaged machinery and technology that he didn't recognize. The rooms, he said, were clearly some kind of scientific research facilities in nature, laboratories, if you will. Most notably, Minnick claimed to have discovered records that indicated vast quantities of food purchased for Camp Hero in the late 1980s. It totaled to over $80,000 in value per month. And this was even though the base had been officially decommissioned well before, back in 1983. So this sum of money is the equivalent to around $220,000 worth of product in today's value. That would feed a hell of a lot of people. In July 2008, a strange and discolored creature washed ashore near Camp Hero. Four girls walking along the beach at Ditch Plains stopped to inspect what they thought was the body of a sun-baked dog. Jenna Hewitt, 26, of Montauk, and three friends said that they found the creature on July 12th at the Ditch Plains beach, 2 miles east of the district. I'll post an image of the creature in the description of this episode. The creature had cloth-like bindings around its legs, and it had what looked like a beak instead of a snout. Within the beak, bizarrely, were rows of sharp teeth. An image taken by the girls was first published in The Independent before it was picked up by Gawker and circulated internationally. Lauren Coleman, the director of the International Cryptozoology Museum, traveled to New York, but by the time he arrived, the body of the creature was gone. Local people speculated the creature came from the Animal Disease Center at nearby Plum Island. Perhaps the creature had escaped from the laboratory and died in the water. However, later, visitors to the Animal Disease Center confirmed that security measures were extensive and an animal escape was extremely unlikely. Others began to speculate that the creature was the result of experiments conducted at Montauk, that somehow the aperture had never closed. Lauren Coleman would later confirm that this theory was the most plausible. William Wise, director of Stony Brook University's Living Marine Resources Institute, stated that the creature was likely a decomposed raccoon. He explained that decomposition, combined with impacts of rough water, can cause what is known as slippage within the makeup of a dead creature. This is when skin and underlying fat separate from one another to cause the distorted appearance of the Montauk monster. However, in 2020, there appeared another creature on the same beach of Montauk. It was almost identical to the first, and it appeared shortly before the 4th of July, the exact same time of year as the creature from 2008. Whilst the proposition of a decomposed raccoon has been put forward, both creatures discovered on the beach have had solid beak-like snouts, making raccoons seem unlikely to those who are critical of the scientific explanation. Is there a more supernatural explanation, do you think? The Montauk Project is another entry in a long catalogue of conspiracies that surround the United States government and military organizations. Attempts to not only explore but weaponize the human mind might seem like science fiction, but declassified documents and a number of government staff, military and politicians have admitted over the years of numerous such experiments within the last 70 years. MKUltra, which ran between 1953 to 1973 officially, is the first example that comes to mind. That is along with Project Stargate, which ran from 1970 to 1995. This was a series of experiments and operations investigating psychic phenomena, particularly, quote, remote viewing. The Pentagon Reincarnation Project of the 1980s, which hypothesized that consciousness could be a quantum entity persisting after physical death, and the subsequent 10-year research into investigating that. There's also Project Sunshine, Project Blue Book, the Hotel Memo, the Robertson Panel Report, the Majestic 12 Papers, Operation Northwoods, the CIA 1973 Remote Viewing of Jupiter Session, the CIA Psychic Interrogation Sessions of the 1970s, the CIA Cosmic Logs of the 1960s, the Friedman UFO Briefing, the 1984 Psychic Probing of Mars, and Operation Paperclip. All of these, when you research them, seem like a crazy Stephen King novel or a Steven Spielberg movie. But they are all 100% real and genuine US government programs that have been declassified and revealed to the general public. These are not even speculation or rumored. They are factual. Which makes you think, well, if this is what they are declassifying, what the hell are they still keeping secret? The Montauk Project is what gave the initial inspiration to the writers of the hit science fiction series, Stranger Things. But if this project, like many other similar government projects, gets fully declassified, then we truly do have even stranger things to consider in our realm of reality. I'll end on a quote by Professor Walter Kochnig. He said in 1930, "Keep an open mind, but not so open that your brains fall out." Good night, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening to tonight's episode. If you want access to even more episodes, articles, research, and blog posts, head over to our Patreon and sign up. It's just $2. For that, you get a hell of a lot more content, but you also support us and our work. Head to www.patreon.com/deadsouls. Thanks again.